Before we get started, a brief reminder that any and all opinions and views shared by hosts and guests on this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Primal Kitchen or its affiliates or parent company.
A big thing that I've learned, you know, in this past years that I've been in the alternative education world was that before I was like, online education, big no-no. I've been a teacher. I understand how important it is for kids to feel like there's a caring human on the other side. So I was like, this is never going to work. But I was very surprised because what I realized is online education, what it does is it delivers things more tailored to you and faster so that you're not in school for 7 hours a day, because it's not true that kids are learning for 7 hours a day. We know that their attention spans are very short. You can't have a kid, you know, trying to pay attention to you for 45 minutes. They're not going to. If you can deliver this that's according to their attention spans, fast, to the point, applicable, relevant, exciting, then they have the rest of the day to do other things. Like, that's really exciting. That's the kind of education I would have wanted as a kid, right?
Hey everyone, today I'm super excited to be joined by Ana Lorena Fabrega. She's an edupreneur, which means an entrepreneur in the education space, and chief evangelist at Synthesis, the education company scaling up the best ideas from Elon Musk's lab school at SpaceX. Growing up, she attended 10 schools in 7 different countries. She then earned her BS in childhood education and special education from New York University and taught elementary school in New York, Boston, and Panama. Today, Ana Lorena writes online to over 300,000 readers about the promise of alternative education. Let's get into it. So you lived in 7 different countries. You went to school in 7 different countries. This is crazy.
Yes. So I'm originally from Panama, but because of my dad's job, we had to move around a lot. And so by the time that I was 14, I had attended 10 different schools in Panama, Colombia, Venezuela, India, Mexico, Brazil, and the US. And so when it comes to schooling, I like to say that I've been around the block a few times. And so I picked up on the different things, what I call in my book, the game of school, right? The things that I had to do in order to pass and survive all these different academic environments and social environments and expectations from moving around so much.
So cool. And then it almost sounds like you kind of had traditional path into education, but then you have since moved into more of an alternative education path. So tell me about that journey for you. Like, what led you to Synthesis? And I don't know, where did you see the system kind of wasn't working anymore? Like, how'd you get here?
Yeah. So again, as I was growing up, I didn't quite realize this. This is all upon reflecting as an adult. But I had to survive these different academic expectations. And even though I was going to school, and there were different kinds of schools, mostly traditional, but I also went to some that were a little bit more progressive, some that were very religious, non-denominational, so, you know, public, private. And even though it was different countries, continents, different languages, school looked pretty much the same everywhere. And the game of school, which is, you know, I knew when to raise my hand to get that participation grade, what kind of questions would get me in trouble, so I better not ask them, what kind of questions I could ask to please my teacher, the kind of things that I could do or couldn't do, how to behave well, how to, you know, take all those worksheets and multiple choice tests and everything to pass. But I wasn't really learning in terms of like learning that would endure beyond the classroom. And I was able to preserve all this curiosity that I talk a lot about and this sense of awe for life that kids are naturally born with, because my mom did such an excellent job outside of school to sort of let me pursue my interest and learn about the things that I was actually interested about and talk about these things and ask so many questions about the world and about everything. And so I feel like she really helped keep that learning spark alive. And so I really love talking to people and you know, learning about new things and sharing what I was learning. And I had sort of a natural way of doing that. So I decided to become an educator. And as I was forming in, you know, I did my bachelor's degree, as you mentioned, in New York University, I had to go to different placements, different schools in New York City, and observe for hours the different teachers doing what they do, right? And some of them were wonderful teachers. And even so, I was really, really, really impressed when I was looking at the students. Regardless of the school, regardless of how great the teacher was, the students were playing the same game of school that I would play, right? They were just sort of going through the motions in order to get the academic learning out of the way. They were really bored. They were daydreaming. They couldn't wait to get out to recess, yet recess was so short. And I was like, this doesn't quite make sense, but I guess, you know, this is what we've been doing for so many years. So, and I didn't question so much yet. But I was like, you know what, I'm going to do things differently in my classroom. And so to a certain extent, I did. I ended up graduating. And I try to do things differently in my classroom, but I couldn't help but realize that as students would move on to different grades, even if they fell in love with reading in my classroom and writing and math, and they could ask questions and we would sort of deviate from the curriculum to really dig into the things that they were already curious about, not what the lesson plan or the unit had to teach, right? And I would notice that they would then come back to visit me and they had lost this sort of spark for learning. They didn't want to learn for pleasure anymore. They thought they were not good in reading or in math or in science because they had become they had been given all these labels, right? Because they were not, you know, learning at the same pace as everybody else or all these sort of problems. And I was like, well, what's going on? Because we know that kids are, again, naturally curious. They're born with this natural instinct to learn. Like I have a 15-month-old at home right now, and all he does is learn. From the moment he wakes up, he's like trying to figure things out, touching everything, breaking everything, bumping into things, and just trying to figure out the world around him, right? He doesn't talk yet, but once they start talking, they start asking questions. That's their way of trying to figure out everything that's thrown at them, right? They're trying to think for themselves. Suddenly, when kids enter school, learning is no longer a choice, right? It sort of becomes enforced. They have no choice over the topics or the lessons or the way they're presented. They don't get to choose what they want to learn. They don't get to choose how they showcase the things that they're learning. They're sort of one way and everyone better fit in this one mold. You know, there's a set of questions that, again, will get you in trouble. You can't really question everything like you did when you were a child. You start to learn that, oh, if I do this, I get in trouble. If I make a mistake, I get a bad grade, and then that goes on my permanent record, which means, you know, I better not make those mistakes. I better not take those risks. So kids, we start to train kids out of their natural habit, right? We start to sort of squash their curiosity, their creativity. Everyone starts to fit into this like box, right? And then many kids don't fit into that box. So these are the kids that start to fall through the cracks or start to lose the spark for learning. So I became really worried. And I realized that regardless of what I try to do, I still, within the system, would have to teach certain things and leave homework, which is something that I'm not in favor of, especially because kids are already in school for so many hours a day. Yeah. I was very concerned with the lack of movement. We know that in order for kids to develop as healthy human beings and in order for them to learn properly, they need to be releasing a lot of energy. They need to be moving. They need to be jumping up and down. And they're not doing this in these classrooms where they have to be sitting up for so many hours and quiet and not talking. And so it just, it was very evident and obvious that we were doing things that were not optimal for the students. And you just have to look at them to know that they're not enjoying their time there. And of course, I'm generalizing, right? Like there's some students that are perfectly cut for the system, but I would argue that most are not. And so yeah. I was very frustrated. And after 4 years, I decided, you know, I love working with kids. I love what I do. I have such a great relationship with them, but there has to be a better way. And so I left the traditional school system in search of alternative learning experiences that kids would actually want to be part of. Learning experiences where they would, where we would help them learn the skills that are going to help them thrive in this ever-changing, chaotic future that we live in, right? Two-thirds of the kids that are going through grade school right now will end up doing jobs that haven't been invented yet. So I was like, you know, instead of teaching them what to think and how to do things and all this knowledge that may or may not be relevant in the future, we need to teach them how to think for themselves, how to, you know, approach failure, how to take risks, how to work in teams, how to collaborate, how to communicate effectively, how to find what they're really, really good at and then double down on that. Not so much trying to remediate their weaknesses, which is a lot of what happens in school. And they need to graduate knowing what they're excited to do and what they're good at, right? In order to sort of pursue that and be able to pivot in different directions and ask questions. And so as I started to explore this whole alternative education world, it turns out that there are a lot of startups and a lot of homeschooling communities and alternative school communities that are doing things differently and where kids are excited to learn. And they're learning very, very differently than we normally see in school. And suddenly all this opportunity started to become obvious. And I was like, why aren't we doing, like, why aren't more kids following this path? And it's because many parents just don't know about this opportunities or they haven't quite realized that the way that we've been teaching is very outdated and there's a much better way to do it. And so I ended up joining Synthesis, which is this educational company that originated at SpaceX when Elon Musk realized the same things that we've been talking about, that a lot of parents have realized. You know, my kids are not learning how to think. They're very bored. They're not being able to apply a lot of the things that they learn because they forget about them. They're just memorizing things. We need to create our own school. So he hired Josh Don, who's one of our co-founders, to start a brand new school at SpaceX without following the traditional, you know, parameters or, you know, the standards and all these academic things that schools usually fall into. And so what ended up happening was that kids were learning through projects. So instead of learning, you know, subjects in isolation, which is what happens in school, here they had this like big problem that they were presented with, and it was usually a real life problem. And they had to then use and learn about different skills in order to solve that problem. So they were really putting into practice the things that they were learning. And what research shows is that knowledge decays really quickly. So unless you put into practice what you've been learning in the next 14 days, even if it's theoretically interesting to you, you will forget about it. Which, you know, if you look at a lot of the things that we teach in school, most of the time they don't have practical applications right away. We're teaching, again, just in case for this future that may or may not come. And so in this, you know, in this school that was called Ad Astra when it started, everything had practical applications and it was all hands-on and it was through projects. And so kids were really in charge. They did not have instructions, like the teachers would barely intervene. They were more of facilitators and guides that would pose questions and would sort of cheer you to keep going when things got hard. And it was really challenging because something that we've realized that we get wrong in school is that we water things down, we give kids a bunch of instructions, we don't want for them to get confused, when in reality, kids want that complexity. They crave that complexity. And that's why they're so drawn to like video games, right? They're not drawn to video games because they're easy. They're drawn to video games because they're challenging and because they have to figure things out and because they get to keep trying until they finally achieve what they're trying to achieve. And so we modeled like a lot of the things that we learned from games to this school, and the kids loved it. They were so excited. They felt so empowered. They were at the driver's seat. And the most popular class there was this class called Synthesis, which was this challenges that kids had to compete and collaborate against each other. And they learned different mental models that they had to apply in order to solve the challenges. And it was very high-paced and no instructions. They had to figure things out. They got to fail over and over again and pick themselves up and realize that this is part of the learning process. They would not get these grades that would, you know, punish them for learning, which is what happens in school. And so the results were just outstanding. Now, the problem is that the school was only for 48 kids, right? Elon's six kids and then the SpaceX employees, like the kids of them. But we were like, okay, how can we grab this Synthesis course and put it online so that kids all over the world have access to this? And so that was the origin of Synthesis. This happened like 3 years ago, where we launched the company, and it started as a set of simulations that kids get to play from ages 8 through 14. And there's mixed ages, right? Because that was one of the parameters in for this school and for Synthesis. This idea of grade levels that we have in schools doesn't make sense, right? Because we know, like, when in the real world do you only interact with people your age? Only in a school setting, right? And so if you actually look at mixed age schools, which I got the opportunity to work at one of them in New York City, it's really incredible what happens when you have younger kids learning from older kids, and then I'm trying to imitate them, and they would automatically take on challenges that otherwise they would not even have been exposed to, right, when they're in grade levels. Because when you put grade levels, you say you're going to learn up to here, right? Even if you can do more or you want to do more, no, you get to learn that next year. And so we are putting a speed limit to kids learning. And then the older kids, when they get to actually be with younger kids, they get this sense of like, oh, I'm the older kid, I'm the more mature, I want to teach them, you know, the teacher's assistant. And so they get to actually teach. And we know from research that the best way to learn something is to teach it, right? And so you have this very beautiful natural process where teachers could step out of the room, and there was so much teaching and learning going on when you have mixed age groups. And so Ad Astra was mixed age, and now Synthesis is mixed age. And so we started with this, you know, team simulations that would teach the soft skills that we talked about, communication, how to fail, how to, you know, make difficult decisions under pressure, which is something that kids rarely have a chance to do nowadays, like be independent and make real decisions when they're younger. And all the things that we really think that they're going to need in order to thrive in this ever-changing world, regardless of what they want to do. And we've made it really, really fun. It feels like playing a video game. And now this year, we launched our second product, which is the AI Tutor, which tackles the hardcore academics. We started with math. And what's incredible about this is that it feels like you're really talking to a human. So it's not like the apps that you see out there. And the kids are able to learn so much faster all the different subjects with, you know, just an hour of learning a day. So it opens up the rest of your afternoon to actually be kids, which is one of the biggest things that I've been fighting for. You know, I feel like we've removed the childhood from kids, right? They're in school for so many hours a day, then they come back, they have after school adult-led activities, then they have homework and then dinner and they go to bed. When do they get a chance to just play or get bored by an activity and come up with creative ideas and just be kids, right? Like in the past, like our parents and our grandparents. And so hopefully this kind of alternative education experiences are solving for that problem. So that was a long answer to sort of share what my journey has been like and what we're working on now and why I'm so passionate about what I'm doing.
So cool. So clarify a few things for me. So is it like for homeschoolers or is it like supplemental to kids who are in traditional schools or both?
We have kids from all over the place. So we have kids that are homeschoolers, and this is sort of the big chunk of their education. We have kids that go to traditional school, and then they use this in the afternoon as part of to complement their current education. And then we have kids that are world schoolers that are constantly traveling, so they don't go to a particular place, but they also don't do homeschooling, and they do this. And then we even have adults trying it out, to be honest, because a lot of us have to relearn these skills, right? Or unlearn the skills that are holding us back and relearn in order to sort of be able to do different things nowadays in this world.
So cool. I love it. So would you say like what percent are homeschoolers and what percent are, I don't know, add-on schoolers? Like, I'm curious.
Yeah. So actually I was just talking to the CEO yesterday and he told me right now, 50% of our students, like half are homeschoolers, which is pretty incredible because we have a big number of students at this point. And and a lot of them come from homeschooling, which is great because they get to sort of plug this in. And we're just starting with the tutor, right? Like the tutor's just, we're scratching the surface. Like we just have math right now. We're working on complexity science and adding all the STEM subjects first. But once that's rolling, it's going to be pretty incredible because you're going to be able to do that. And then you have, again, the rest of your afternoon to do working projects or, you know, go to a micro school or a forest school or, you know, join sports or music. So it's really going to give parents a flexibility that they don't have now. And a lot of parents that I talk to say, okay, Anna, I understand what you're saying, but I don't feel like I am capable of homeschooling. Like either I don't have the time or I don't really want to, which is totally fair, or I don't feel like I have the skills or, you know, and then with something like this, this would take care of it, right? Now, a big problem we have is traditional schools serve as a babysitting center, right? Most of parents have to work, so they have to drop their kids off. Yeah, so they have to drop their kids off somewhere that's quote-unquote safe. And I say quote-unquote because, well, things have been changing a lot, unfortunately, lately when it comes to safety in schools. But they have to drop their kids somewhere, right, where they're with adults and with other kids. So what we're trying to work on now is like, how can we create centers or places where kids from different, you know, academic environments come in and they get to work on these things and they are with, you know, facilitators and adults and they get to interact and socialize with other kids, but they get to work on their own thing and then parents can pick them up. And so we're starting to see these hubs, like learning hubs, and they look like co-working spaces for kids. There are a few in Arizona that are really cool called Moonrise. So I think that, you know, the more that we have these options available, the more parents are going to be able to do this.
Yeah, totally. Wait, sorry, where is Moonrise? Miami, did you say?
In Arizona.
In Arizona. Are there any in Los Angeles?
Yeah.
Selfishly?
Yeah. No, not yet, but they're looking to, expand. Well, not from this brand, not Moonrise, but I'm sure that people are already thinking about it because I feel like this is really going to solve a big problem that we have and it's going to invite more parents to opt in for alternative education.
Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned you have a 15-month-old. I'm just going to ask you like the real question. So what do you plan on doing for your son?
I get this question all the time. And it's funny because I don't have a straight up answer. And the reason for that is because, A, I've been in the school system long enough to know that whatever I end up doing will be better than what he would be receiving in school. Two, based on all the research that I've done, it's very, very clear to me that kids don't need to be in school or receive any type of formal education until they're about 7 years old. And in fact, that's how they do it in Finland, for example. Like kids don't start school until they're seven. And people are often like, well, obviously then when they start school at seven, they're so behind. And it's like, behind on what? All these parameters and all this like criteria that we've created ourselves. But if you actually look at the data, it doesn't show that. Like Finland students are not behind at all. In fact, once they start, they've had 7 years to play around, unstructured learning, self-directed learning. They're very autonomous. They are very excited about life and about learning because it has not been, you know, controlled from such a young age. And so once they enter school, they're ready to start grasping on things and they're like sponges, right? They start to absorb everything. So if you actually compare a student in seventh grade in the US, for example, with one in Finland towards the end of the year, they're pretty much at the same place. The difference is that the Finland students are very excited and you know, they haven't lost that curiosity. So I am just really chill for the first 7 years. I just want him to play. I take him to a lot of different classes so that he's interacting with others, other kids, like different ages. I just keep him. My number one priority is to keep his curiosity alive. Once he gets a little bit older and he starts to try out different things, I'm a big believer in letting them try a range of different activities and sports and instruments until they sort of figure out where they want to spend their time on.
Yeah.
And then, so giving them free time, but sort of the resources and the creative space and other students to take any interest they have and any productive interest they want in whatever direction they want. So I'm going to be very flexible. I do love the Montessori approach, for example. However, I'm very, like, something I've noticed is that many schools nowadays call themselves Montessori, but they're not really Montessori. Like, they just have maybe one or two things, and then they're very scripted in certain ways. And then, so we have to be careful when we're choosing where to put our kids to see if they're actually any kind of play-based elementary, let's say, or like early childhood program, I think is super important. And I think it's great where kids get to sort of explore different things and learn how to be independent and be around other kids. I think that's super important. I love forest schools. I don't know if you've heard of them, but I find them fascinating. It sort of solves that problem that we were talking about of having kids confined from such a young age when their bodies are developing. So forest schools, kids are running around, they're in nature, they're exploring and learning based on the things that they're encountering. And so I think that's really great. I'm also a fan of micro schools. And, you know, you can find, there's some great hubs online that you can find, like Prenda micro schools, where they, depending on where you live, they'll tell you, you know, what micro schools are around your area. Or if you want to start your own micro school, you can go ahead and do that. And micro schools, for those that don't know and are listening to this, are any sort of like smaller class, and they can take place at a house, of one of your neighbors or at a church or sort of like a physical space, but they're usually small groups of students. They're mixed age and they're learning through projects. The curriculums are very flexible depending on what the parents of the kids want. And so it's really a way to start that formal education without squashing all these things that you know, I claim that schools do. And so I'm also interested in that. And, you know, maybe I decide to do my own, or maybe I decide to have him join one of them. And then once he does hit that age around 7, 8, I plan to use something like the digital tutor, the synthesis tutor, where he will be able to start to learn all the hardcore academics, let's call it that, you know, for an hour a day. And in a way that's very, so what I love about the digital tutor is that it's like this infinitely patient teacher, right? Like, one of my biggest frustrations in school was that I could not possibly divide myself. I had 30 students and I couldn't, you know, I would see little Morgan that was struggling with this math concept that clearly had all this, you know, gaps from previous years, but I couldn't sit down with you until you mastered it, right? Because sometimes it took a while and I couldn't stop the whole class. Yeah. And that was very frustrating. And I had no idea how we were going to solve this problem. Then when I suddenly learned about the AI tutors, I was like, oh my God, like, these tutors will stay with you until you've mastered the material, and they will not give up. They will not, you know, move on until you've mastered it. And so suddenly what you start to see in the students is that they start to gain this confidence that they really lack in traditional school environments, right? And they're like, wait, I'm actually good at math. And they start to see the practical application of math, because that's the other thing. Everything we teach has an immediate practical application, and they see how they're going to use it in the real world. And so I plan to use something like that to start covering the hardcore academics. And then I'm a big believer in project-based schools. I think that's the most fun and the best way to learn and to actually have his things stick. When you give them a project or you give them a problem, and then they're going to be like, okay, wait, I need to learn how to work with big numbers in order to do this. Or, oh, I need to learn about the planets in order to be able to figure out. So there's suddenly like the desire to learn about these things, and also the, you know, they understand how it fits into the larger picture. Because like I mentioned earlier, in school, we are like, okay, math, 45 minutes. Now close math, open science, 45 minutes. Now close science, now let's do reading. Things are not connected. So it's really, really hard for you to learn that way, because knowledge is interconnected and our brains are interconnected. And so when you have a project or you have a problem, like they did at an Astra in synthesis, then suddenly all these things come together in a way that makes sense to you, and you understand how all the pieces of the puzzle fit together. Does that make sense? And so that's definitely going to be a huge part. And there are some great project-based schools. A big problem is that, you know, you're limited to your geographical location. So if I live in Miami right now, like, if I don't find one that's in Miami, then that means that, oh, I probably have to move somewhere else. So I'm hoping that as things continue to advance, we can have access to this sort of online communities working in this project-based learning, so that we can do that maybe online. And then we can use the rest of the day to do other things. And so a big thing that I've learned you know, in this past years that I've been in the alternative education world was that before I was like, oh no, online education, big no-no. Like there is nothing like the human interactions. Like I've been a teacher. I understand how important it is for kids to feel like there's a caring human on the other side and the physical aspect of things. So I was like, this is never going to work. But I was very surprised because what I realized is, you know, online education, what it does is it delivers things more tailored to you and faster so that you're not in school for 7 hours a day, right? Because it's not true that kids are learning for 7 hours a day. I've been a teacher. There's a lot of wasted time and daydreaming and, you know, kids are not tuned in. So if you could have them, and also we know that their attention spans are very short. You can't have a kid, you know, trying to pay attention to you for 45 minutes. They're not going to. And so if you can deliver this, that's according to their attention spans, fast, to the point, applicable, relevant, exciting, then they have the rest of the day to do other things. Like, that's really exciting. Like, that's the kind of education I would have wanted as a kid, right? And so I'm looking forward to doing this. But again, to sort of wrap up my answer, I am not rushing into it. I don't have this pressure that I see a lot of my friends that are like, oh my God, like my kid is one and I'm already thinking I need to enroll them in this school because of the spots and this and that and all this pressure, because I know that this pressure, we've made it up, right? There is no data that shows that kids need to learn how to read by 7 or learn how to do math by this grader. No, somebody came up with that at some point and we've not questioned it and just sort of, you know, adopted this. It has to be this way. And then we stress out about it. We stress our kids about it. And then all this made up pressure, right? I don't have that because I already know that he can learn how to read at 2. He can learn how to read at 11 and it's okay. He's not going to be behind. As long as I'm doing my part, which is keep him excited about everything, make sure that he's happy with whatever decision that we make, be able to pivot anytime anything's not going well, because that's a big one, right? I can say right now, I'm going to try this, but maybe I have a student, like maybe I have a kid that's like my husband, very traditional, or he wants to go to school. And if that's the case, by all means, let's enroll him in a school that he wants. As long as he's excited, he's asking questions, he comes back and he's like telling me what he learned about and he wants to keep learning, then something's working. And so I'm very flexible when it comes to that. And I'm just taking it day by day. I'm also seeing how many things are coming up nowadays so quickly that I am very optimistic that by the time he's 7, which is sort of around that time that I said that we can start to think of a more structured and, you know, direct instruction, there are going to be so many other options available. So I'm really looking forward to that.
For sure. Have you heard of Acton Academy?
I have. I'm a big fan and I loved their book Growing Up. I can't remember the title right now. I totally forgot the title, but yes, great. Cool. And there's
that's an example of project-based learning, right?
Yes. And the thing about Acton schools is that they're all very different because it depends on who opens the school, right? It's like run by parents and there's, and there's certain things that, But I'm a big fan of their principles. I think their head is at the right place. I think they're prioritizing the kind of things that matter. And there's actually one that's like 4 minutes away from my house and they invited me to come visit. So I have that pending. But yes, I'm a fan of Acton School.
Yeah, I've looked into a bunch. I was like, I should start one. It's so cool. I think it's really cool. It's like a one-room schoolhouse for those listening that don't know. You guys can go look it up. And if you're interested in learning, and maybe you have some other resources for us, and I'm sure you do, but you guys could just check out actonacademy.com and there's like a search in there to see. There's actually like a ton of them. I think they really blew up in popularity during COVID. So they're all over. I know there's some by me in California. There was a bunch in Florida. They are an Austin, Texas-based company. So I think there's quite a few down there, but there's a lot of them. So something to check out. What other resources would you recommend for people who are looking into like alternative stuff?
Yeah. So I just Googled really quickly, what's the name of the book? And it's called Courage to Grow. So for anyone interested in the story of how Acton came about, you can go ahead and it's a short read. Okay. So we talked about forest schools. We talked about micro schools. They became really popular in the pandemic. They existed before, but those like pods. We talked about project-based learning. We talked about online education and online communities, by the way, because something that I've noticed as well is that kids need, in order to learn and develop and grow as healthy individuals, they need to feel, well, three things, which I talk about in my book. One is autonomy, which is one that's clearly lacking in schools, right? Like we choose everything from kids, from what they wear to, you know, where they sit when they get to talk, what side of the paper they get to write with, what color of pen, like everything is decided for them. And therefore, you know, they don't get to experience autonomy. So when they get out of school, we need to make sure that they have a saying over whatever it is that they're doing, which is, by the way, why a lot of kids are drawn to video games. You know, parents are super concerned, but when they actually look, most of them are drawn to it because it's the only moment where they actually get to choose what they're doing, who they're playing with, what they're playing, what their characters wear, etc. And so that's one thing. The other thing, kids need to feel competence. And this is adults as well, right? But let's just focus on kids for the purpose of this conversation. But so autonomy, competence. So you need to feel like you're good at something and like you're improving at something. Again, a lot of kids are really good at many things, but they're not necessarily academic things. And therefore, when they go to school, they don't get to feel that feeling of competence. And this is very detrimental to their health. So again, for parents, super important for us to find something outside of school where they're good at, whether it's a sport or an instrument or a class or a project or even video games, right? Where they get to advance to the next level, like anything that's going to make them feel like they're improving and they're good at something. And then the third thing is relatedness. And a lot of parents say, oh, I sent my kid to school so that they can socialize and so that they can have friends. Well, again, I've been a teacher and I've been a student in many, many schools. And the reality is that our time in school is, first, we are, again, restricted by, you know, in a classroom with the same group of students, our age for many years. Sometimes we don't connect necessarily with those 30 students that we are surrounded with. The second thing is sometimes we're more mature. Sometimes we have different interests. And so what I've noticed with learning communities online is that, and we see this a lot with Synthesis, like kids get to suddenly find this one student in Africa, in Australia, in Ecuador, wherever, that really they connect with and that they get to learn with, and they challenge their ideas, and suddenly they become peers because they connected at a very deep level, and they're just working on this amazing things together. They're problem solving in ways that I've never seen kids problem solve before. And I was like, well, what is this? And I started to realize that it's because it gives you access to such a large, you know, scope of kids all over the world, and you really get to connect at a very deep and different level that you get in school. So when parents are looking for alternative things, I often say, even if you're not doing anything online, trying to find an online community, something like Primer or, you know, something where kids get to connect with kids from all over the world and then work on something, on a project or something together, I think it's wonderful and very, very beneficial. Cool. So we talked about that. We talked about exposing kids to a range of different things, you know, sports and different things, and then giving them the opportunity to quit. This is something that I emphasize a lot, because what I noticed in school is that quitting is sort of seen as a negative thing, right? It's like, oh, quitters are losers. You start something, you better stick to it. And of course, perseverance is super important. But when you're persevering in the wrong direction, you're better off quitting, right? And finding something that's better for you. And so many kids and they grow up to adults that are scared of quitting, and therefore they stick to something that they don't like, that they're not necessarily good at, just because they already started it, right? And so I'm of the mentality of quit early, quit often. And when I had my students, I would, for example, I noticed they did not want to read and they were bored and they would grab a book. And I was like, you know what? Let's come up with a list of principles of why it would be okay to abandon a book. And so we all start to brainstorm. We wrote a few, you know, a bunch of different reasons. And then I would start to let them grab a book and quit if it, you know, matched one of those reasons.
Yeah.
What ended up happening was that my third graders started to drop and abandon a bunch of books. And then they would find the right one that hooked them. And they would actually stick through it and read the entire book and then grab another book. The amount of books that my kids started reading was so much more than what they were reading before. And it was because I gave them that opportunity. And it goes the same for different sports and for different things. Like, you need to come up with sort of like this rules together or principles of why you would quit this sport. You know, not because it's too hard or, you know, no, but because maybe you're not that into it anymore. Or, you know, after you tried it a few times, you're like, you know, this is not for me. I would rather quit this, but then try something else. So I think that that's super valuable, super important, and something that I've noticed that people that are, you know, found their sort of passion and what they're really good at, it's because they had that opportunity to try many different things and they were exposed to many different things, but they were able to quit them along the way without having sort of like that negative stigma. So I often say that. And then I am a big believer of passion projects. And I think that, you know, adults sort of start to do this on their free time when we're older. But I think that there's something so valuable when kids start something that they're curious about. And it can be something that you're like, what is my kid going to do with this in the future? Like magic or, you know, anything that they're curious about. Even if you don't understand where they're taking this, you support them. You become the perfect enabler. You give them the resources. You give them the attention. You give them anything for them to take this. And even if you know they're probably going to fail because either they're not that great at it or you see where this is going, you let them. You let them, and then they're going to learn from that failure. And so I often talk about that, like that's something that we parents have to teach our kids, like how to overcome those obstacles and how to get comfortable with failure, because unfortunately they're not learning that in school. They're learning the opposite in school. And so I have a whole chapter in my book about, like, it's called 8 ways to exit the system without leaving school. Because again, the reality for many parents is they can't pull their kids out of school. And so what are the things that you can do? And I only mention 8, but as you read the book, you'll notice there's so many things that we can do just by becoming aware of all this, you know, things that are happening, to sort of save them from not, you know, not losing that spark. Because the whole point of education is for you to want to continue to learn on your own once you are, you know, done. Once there's no teacher telling you what to do or no test coming up next week, like you still need to want to continue to improve and you need to know how to keep learning on your own. And I feel like we're not doing a great job in school teaching that. So we as parents need to be able to teach that and modeling the kind of behavior that we want to see, right? They watch us and they see how we react to failure, how we react when things don't go wrong, how we make decisions, how do all these things. They're observing us and they're learning from us. So always setting that kind of example that we want to see in them. So those are some of the things that come to mind. Definitely something like synthesis where they can, and synthesis is not the only thing, but it's the best that I've seen out there right now, where they get to be in this really challenging environments where they get to, again, compete against each other, but also collaborate. They have to strategize. They need to make decisions under pressure. They need to pick themselves up. They fail like 1,000 times in one class and they get frustrated. And that's great because in life, kids are going to get frustrated. Kids are going to face complexity. Kids are going to face, you know, adversity. And if we don't teach them at a young age how to handle all these things, then how are we going to expect them to do it on their own in real life? You know, one of the biggest things that I see, and now that I'm a parent, I see how hard it is, right? We have this tendency to want to overprotect our kids and sort of solve things for them when they get frustrated or when they're stuck, or we don't want to see them sad. We don't want to see them suffer. We want to protect them from danger. But what I've noticed is that by doing all that to an extreme, we end up really harming them in the long term, right? They're way better off if we try to let them, you know, we're there, but we don't intervene when they're doing dangerous things carefully. Or we're there, but we let them, you know, take that little bump at the park or, you know, try that class where we know we're not probably going to fail, but it's okay. And then we teach them how to overcome that. Or we expose them, you know, we don't shield them from adversity. Like, of course, there's age appropriate things, but like we teach them how to cope with these things because they need the skills in order to be able to do that by themselves in the future. And so that's a big part of home education, regardless of what your kid does. So I always talk about that when I talk to parents. And then reading. For me, reading is such a huge part of any kind of education, right? And so expose them to books, let them choose, give them a lot of choice, like let them choose what they want to read for how long they want to read, but just have it become a part of their day and not as homework, right? I have such an issue with kids seeing reading as homework because there's a negative connotation there and then they don't want to do it for pleasure. And then what's the whole point of learning how to read if you don't want to do it for pleasure, right? And so really fostering that habit at home, I think is very important and starts by modeling it.
Yeah. Yeah, I have boys. You have a boy too. I just like sometimes wonder, and I'm sure there's data to back this up, just how much harder, I don't know, education is for boys than girls. It seems like, you tell me, is there any data here on this? Like,
oh my God, yes. Okay, so if you look at the data, and this is controversial, it's surprising, but for some people it may not be surprising, but I've always been alarmed, especially because I was one of these kids, the amount of kids that get diagnosed nowadays with ADHD. Like if you look at the increase of kids that have been diagnosed in the US, by the way, like this doesn't happen to be a universal phenomenon. It's mostly in the US over the past 20 years. It's just ridiculous. And then if you look at that percentage, the vast majority are boys. Why? Because physiologically, boys have, you know, just they have more energy. They have to release more energy. And so they are the first ones that need to be running around from, you know, the very start of the day until they're exhausted. Not like tired, like exhausted. And ironically enough, That's when they're ready to start learning. When they are tired, when they've released all that energy, that's when their brains kick into gear. That's when they're ready to actually like absorb and consume information. If you look at the way that we start our days in school, we start the days way too early for anybody, but especially for kids, because now the data shows how important it is for kids to get sleep, especially, by the way, in those early hours in the morning, which is crazy. And so, and then they don't really get to move until PE time or that 15-minute recess that they have. And then, of course, you see them fidgeting in their desk. You see them moving. You see them, like, not paying attention. They start to misbehave. Sometimes it's because they're bored. Sometimes it's because they need to move. And then what do? We're like, oh, this kid has ADHD. We need to diagnose him. We need to medicate this kid. The amount of kids nowadays that are medic, and I'm not saying that no kid has ADHD and that no kid needs to be you know, to each their own. I was one of those kids that was medicated, and I'm 100% convinced that I should not have been medicated. I did not have any issues. I was just a kid that had a lot of energy. And so with boys in particular, you see them that they get medicated and you just numb them. And yes, they start to focus more because the medicine does that. They start to behave better, right? Because they're numbed and they're not, you know, but that we're not solving the underlying issue. What we need to do is, you know, change. So what I often tell parents, like, look at your kid. If your kid is one of those kids that's coming home with those reports from the teacher saying, we need a medicate before you. And the doctor's going to say yes, right? Most doctors will say yes and sign the thing off. Of course, like, it, you know, but you as a parent need to be strong and really ask yourself, does my kid have ADHD or is he not getting enough movement? So for boys in particular, something like a forest school, I think it's wonderful. And again, there are exceptions. There's some boys that don't necessarily fit into this pattern, but the majority of them do. Like, they really need to be releasing so much energy. You now have schools that are actually starting their days at 10, 11 a.m. so that kids have the chance to actually do a sport or do something, you know, physical in the morning before they get to school. Cool. I think that's genius. You know, so finding something like that, I think it's super important. And yeah, so you probably have noticed this, having three boys.
Yeah. And I think there was just a study even that was like, if you delay school 1 year, I mean, this is like a big trend right now, right? A lot of people are holding their kids back and sending them, you know, I'm going to do that with all of mine. My oldest is a November birthday, so he's going to be old for his grade anyway, but the other two are May and July, and I plan on holding them back. So they essentially won't start kindergarten until they're, you know, six and some change. But delaying kids who delay school like 1 year, they go in a year older, have like, I don't know, something, it was like a crazy reduction in ADHD diagnosis. Like, they're just not ready. I'm with you on the movement. Like, it drives me insane, the thought of like a 30-minute recess being enough for us. And it's really tough to wrap my head around. And I just wonder too, like, girls, like, maybe we're just naturally more like pleasers or something. So we excel in an environment where it's like so reward based. Externally validation based, I guess. But if in theory, like, it's not really ideal for us either. We just happen to like perform a little easier. I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah.
What else is the data telling us on just like, I don't know what's happening in education. I'm curious if there's anything else that stands out to you, like interesting studies that have come out recently or anything like that.
Yeah. So one of the biggest ones, and it touches upon what we were talking about earlier, about how we're raising a generation of kids that are growing into adults that are very risk averse and that are used to following instructions and wait for somebody to tell them what to do and can't quite think for themselves, right? They just sort of, they're used to just thinking what everybody thinks and waiting for that final, you know, project so that they know what to imitate. And so this is really dangerous for, you know, innovation in particular, and then to advance humanity, right? Because in order for you to innovate, and this is something that kids and innovators have in common, that they're able to see mundane things through a new light, right? And they're able to see things that, you know, other people just pick up as ordinary and just sort of look over, right? But when you are, and these are sort of considered the rebels in school, the ones that look at things from different angles and try different things and don't go with the current, right? They sort of like break through the pack and do their own thing. And those are the kind of like, if you, I read this phenomenal book called Raising an Entrepreneur. And even if you don't want to raise an entrepreneur, I recommend this book because the author, I think her name is Morgan, interviews a bunch of different parents of successful entrepreneurs, right? And the one thing that they all have in common is that they had this, first they did things a little bit different. They were the, you know, the misbehaved or the troublemaker or the rebel. And, you know, they didn't quite follow that herd mentality, which school sort of trains you to. And if you look at the history of education, everything starts to make sense. And we can talk about that in a minute, but it dates to 200 years ago. And it was created in order to, like, the original purpose of education was to create loyal, obedient workers for factories. And even before that, a generation of soldiers that would all fight for the same nation and, you know, do the same thing at the same time and nobody deviates. But now we don't need that anymore, right? We need creative problem solvers. We need kids that can think for their own, that can look at a problem from different angles and come up with different solutions, right? Like, those are the, you know, the Bill Gates and the Steve Jobs and the Elon Musk, like this kind of Oprah Winfrey, like people that, by the way, things that they all have in common, they've dropped out of their degree programs at some point in their lives. And it's because they've realized that their time is better spent doing something different. And they actually look at things from a different angle. And so it's so interesting. I think this all goes back to raising kids to be critical thinkers. And this means starting by questioning things and thinking for yourself and teaching kids that that they shouldn't believe everything that gets thrown at them, right? So this is something that in school, you're not allowed to question your teacher or question authority, or if it's in the textbook, then it must be right. And I'm like, no, we need to teach them from a young age to question things, to look at both sides and both points of view, to understand that there's always motives behind the narrator of the story, to understand that we all have biases. You know, we have biases, other people have biases, and therefore the information can be sort of, you know, you need to always double check things. And I think that we don't do this enough. But if you look at all these people that, you know, grew up to do amazing things, they did things differently. They went against the grain. They were the troublemakers, and they had parents that helped them, what we talked about earlier, pursue whatever interest they had. They said, yes, you can do this. Yes, I'm going to support you. I don't know where you're going to take this, but I'll be right there every step along the way. And I think that speaks a lot to what we should be doing nowadays. We talked about, you know, what education should be: more hands-on, more project-based, more relevant, more connected to kids' interests. Parents have a big, you know, role in this. Kids should be able to question things and sort of like have more ownership on their own from the very beginning. So the data clearly shows that those that are, you know, doing things that are incredible for humanity nowadays are not necessarily following that script of the model student, and that success in school does not translate to success in the real world. And so that's something to keep in mind.
Well, for sure. Do you, like, what do you see for the future of synthesis?
Yeah, so we really want to create an alternative K through 12 system, one remarkable product at a time. So we started with the simulations that we call TEAMS, which teach all these soft skills that we claim that schools are not really teaching kids, and in a fun way.
Oh, wait,
and
I have to interrupt you. Yes, I have to ask you a question. I saw this thing. Gary V, if you follow him, he's like, you guys know, right? Gary Vaynerchuk. But he was posting this article the other day about soft skills. And I have never even heard this term, soft skills, but he was saying how in the future, like, hard skills are going to be replaced by technology, AI. These are things like you could teach a computer, like, I don't know, maybe it's accounting or something that's just very black and white and linear. Yes. And what is really being like valued in our society and what is under, developed are these soft skills. So things like intuition, leadership, like fearlessness, just all of these different, like, kind of like the art of being human, I would say, maybe is more the soft skill development, right? And that is where there's going to be like an explosive need in the future. And we're not teaching them. Like, I just have to do a plug for the preschool in LA. We send our kids to it. It's called Town and Country. It's amazing. There's no like academic push. It's very play-based. They do things like, I think this is the best example. They have a bike yard and there's a bike path, right? And it's a circle. And there's no like arrow that says ride this way, because they actually want some kids to ride one way and some kids to ride another. And then when they have a crash, the kids have to figure out what to do, right? So that's like a silly little example of the philosophy of the school. But I'm so obsessed, I'm trying to convince them to open a grade school. I'm like very motivated to get them to expand the philosophy on. But anyway, I just thought the soft skill thing was just like so fascinating to me, and really kind of like, but then it's like, how do you develop the soft skills?
Well, you know, there you go. So first, kudos to your school. I loved that example. And that's exactly the kind of thing that we talk about when we say, you know, we just have to sort of let them figure it out and let them, you know, try something that may be a little bit dangerous, but not really. And they will figure it out. And that just great. I love that example. So the soft skills is exactly what we were targeting when we started to do these simulations, right? We're like, okay, how can we grab a real world, like how to build a Tesla supercharger, for example, or, you know, how to, when all we had all these fires in California, we created a game that was like, okay, how can you actually effectively turn off all these fires? And then we didn't give kids instructions. We would just throw them in the simulations and they had to figure it out. And they were like burning in flames and they had to like figure out how to work together. And then while they were figuring out, like all these other obstacles started happening and it was like chaotic and it was stressful. But then once they played it a few times, they would start to, you know, pick up on different things. They would start at the beginning, oh my gosh, the frustration when they don't tell you what to do, it's a big deal. Like kids would sometimes cry. Like it was like, I'm never going to be able to do this. And we're like, yes, you can. Be patient. Pay attention to the clues. Like just keep on going.
They're just like freaking out.
Absolutely no. Oh, and the adults, we play every Friday and it's so frustrating because they keep on changing the rules. They just throw you and it's uncomfortable. It's really uncomfortable, especially if you like me grew up in very traditional schools where you are used to somebody telling you the rules and the instructions and what to do. And then suddenly you're in this thing and you're like, ah, like what? But then as you keep going, you start to sort of, you know, develop this mindset of, okay, you know what? I've got this. I need to figure out the information. I probably won't get it right the first time, but I know that I'm going to be able to pick myself up and try again, this time with more information. Okay, I'm going to start to use my resources. Let me see, you know, and then they start working in teams very, very differently from working in teams in school. So one of the soft skills is collaboration, but it's funny because you hear like, yeah, in school, we kids learn how to collaborate. No, the teacher gives you a project, very clear instructions. Everybody knows what to do. They delegate. One person always ends up doing most of the job. Then you have three that end up slacking. Like that's not real collaboration, right? If you look at the real world and you look at these companies that, you know, like Apple or SpaceX or companies that are like doing amazing things for humanity, what they have in common is that they have individuals, they align individuals in a shared mission, and then they hire the kind of people that are going to make the team better. And in order to do that, they need to know how to really collaborate. And so when you put kids in this tough, challenging, unpredictable environments where the variables are constantly changing and it's chaotic, like the real world, and they have to figure things out, there's something about those tense environments that unites kids. But the good thing is that the stakes are low, right? Like meaning they, if, you know, if they fail the game, nothing's going to happen in real life. Like this is the moment where we need to do this kind of thing. Not when you're adults and the stakes are high. And if you fail at something, it could be catastrophic. It could be a failed business, a failed marriage. No. Here we're kids. Like they actually, that's the moment where they should be exposed to all these little things where they can start to. So in the simulations, they start to pick up on all these soft skills, how to communicate, how to make decisions, right? Like that's a big one. Like usually when you're kids, everything's decided for you, right? You get to do like very basic decisions, but not like, and then again, you turn 18 and we're like, boop, we magically expect them to know how to make big decisions. How if you've never had a chance to practice? We are of the belief at Synthesis that this should start at age 8, you know? So at age 8, we start to give them like this big decisions to make that again, if you lose, it means yes, leaving your, you know, your team down and things like that. But it's wonderful because we record them and then they get to see over time how they reacted when they failed at the very beginning. And then, or like, you know, when they have lots of disagreements, right? Because everything's so fast, you have to work together. But then one kid doesn't agree, like in real life, you know, you're going to have disagreements and they learn how to have those communication skills to sort things out when the adults are not intervening. We're there in case there's like something out of it, but we're not helping them figure things out and they will get to it. They will be like, eh, you know, and then they'll end up figuring it out. And when they watch themselves throughout the months, they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I acted like that at the beginning. Look at how much I've improved in terms of like leading. And then it's interesting because sometimes they need to know that their position is to lead, but sometimes they need to know when to sit down and listen, which is something that, you know, it's a very valuable skill as well in a group. And so things like that, right? Or another soft skill is this, we've been talking about this idea of like, what do you do when you fail? Like, how do you fail constructively, right? What do you do? Like, if you look at all these people that are doing great things, they didn't get there like in one big jump and just succeeded. No, they failed so many times, but they did not give up. And that's what sets them apart from other people. Most people just give up along the way because it's hard because you don't know what to do. You can't manage that stress. But if you teach them, When they're little, then that's a very different story. So those are the kind of soft skills that we tackle through these simulations. And we have a whole big list of them, plus mental models, which are sort of this maps of reference that they can use in the real world, but they can also use in the games. And so you see them over time as they come every week, 2 to 3 times a week, every week, they keep on practicing. It's like an instrument, right? You need to practice problem solving, collaboration, communication, how to fail, how to make decisions, like all these things about trade-offs over and over again until you become really good at it. And so what we see with kids that have gone through the program many, many times is that they just become rock solid at this kind of things that many adults don't know how to do. And so those are the soft skills. And then I can't remember why we started to talk about soft skills. What was the original question?
In today's world, I was just saying how I just heard that Gary Vee post on like how soft skills are kind of like what we're going to be hiring for in the future.
Yes. And then what you said very, very well, people are worried that AI, you know, it's going to take up all of our jobs. Yes and no. All the basic ones and all the things, it's already starting. You can already tell. But the ability to, you know, think creatively and to, again, all these things like, okay, look at things from different angles. And I don't think AI will ever be able to replace that. So we need to teach kids in a way that's developing those kind of skills. And with a scripted lesson plan where everything's planned, where everyone's learning the same thing, where the teacher has all the answers, you're not teaching kids how to be creative. I like to use the Lego analogy for this. I don't know if you played with Lego when you were little, but Lego originally started as a bucket and you know, you had no instructions, nothing. You just, you would throw the Legos in the floor and then build anything, you know, use your imagination to build, pull apart anything. The company did not do really well. And so they decided to change along their way, their strategy, and they started to build Lego sets. And so they started to sell like crazy with, you know, the Harry Potter in the front or the castle or, you know, the Taj Mahal or whatever. And the kids would build it with the parents. They would follow the instructions to the dot and they looked beautiful. That builds a different set of skills, which is good. You know, yes, we all need to learn how to follow instructions, but it's way more important to be able to do those kind of things without the instructions. And I like this analogy for what's happening in our school system, because we've over-instructed our way through the lesson plans, through everything, to the point where the people that are thinking creatively and problem-solving are the people that are coming up with the lesson plans, the teachers, the administrators, like all, and the kids are just merely sitting there bored following instructions. And so we need to go back to the original Lego philosophy, right? Like, let the kids create and get out of the way. And so I think that it really comes down to that in the end.
I like so struggle. My oldest is obsessed with Legos and he does build a lot. Like we were big Magna Tiles, you know, when he was younger, but he builds a lot on his own. And I'm big on like, you know, you just don't want to do too much instructed learning, right? Like I don't even want him learning how to read right now. Like I have zero interest in that. I feel like there's only a short window where they're just so creative and, you know, it's like sad to bypass that with too much crossing T's and dotting I's, but he is just obsessed with Legos. And I'm like, I don't even want to buy him the new sets because I just want you to be building stuff with that. And he does. He does build with the leftover Lego pieces, but man, it's definitely a thing. Okay, I have two questions for you, two last ones. One of them is, we touched on this a little bit, or we started to go there, but we didn't quite delve into it. So say you're like, I'm sold, I want to do like something like this. How do you guys, is there a program that addresses like reading, like just basic skills that they need that aren't project-based?
So I guess you mean synthesis right now?
Synthesis right now. Like how would you address those just kind of like right. – I don't know what they are.
So right now we're not there yet. We eventually will cover every subject, but we just came out with the tutor at the end of last year. So right now we only have math, like the math curriculum in place. But this year we're definitely going to come out with complexity science, which I didn't even know what it was before, but I'm like, oh my God, my kid totally needs to learn this. I need to learn this. We're going to come, then the next one's physics, chemistry. Cool. And so we're covering the STEM subjects and sort of like the sciences first. And then eventually we'll cover also literacy and like but that's, it's going to take a while to build because the way we're doing it, which is very different from other AI tutors. Yeah. It's like we model it behind like a real person. So we need to find an excellent teacher in this. That's an expert matter and also a great teacher. And then we record them for hours and hours and hours. We capture all their mannerisms, their examples, their jokes and everything. And then that's what goes into the AI tutor, which is why it feels so real. It's crazy. Okay. And cool. So we don't have that yet. However, if you're a parent and you're like, okay, I want to do this and I want to start now because I have a feeling, there's a lot of homeschooling communities and you don't have to like go all the way to homeschooling, but maybe you that actually have resources and you need to be careful if you're doing homeschooling because there's a difference between you know, doing school at home and then doing homeschooling, right? Like some homeschooling is very traditional. And they basically grab exactly the textbooks and the workbooks and everything from school.
Yeah,
and then
they do it at home.
You're doing the same thing.
Everyone,
exactly. But with less kids.
Unschooling, right? Like that's something people could look up because I feel like that kind of addresses what you and I are discussing. Like if you're just going to do what they're doing in the classroom, just send them to the public school.
Might as
right?
well.
Like
exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Totally. And so, but there's a lot of, for example, for writing, there's a wonderful program called Brave Writer by Julie Bogard that I absolutely love. And it's something that you can do even if you're in traditional school and you feel like your kid is not enjoying writing, not really learning how to write, not excited to write. Such an important skill going forward. Such an important skill. And we can talk about that in a little bit. But you can use something like Brave Writer. And, you know, I often tell parents, like, forget about the grammar, forget about the mechanics, forget about like all those things are going to be picked up by AI. Kids are not going to need that. And that's what they hate the most. Focus on what they love the most about writing, which is the ideas. That's the most important thing anyway. So having your kids are filled with ideas, right? So letting them do some like free writing and then trying to figure out what to do with that. And then showing them what they can do with that writing. Where can they send it? Not to paste it in your fridge or to put it in your, you know, file of records. No. Like what can you do with that writing? Who can you persuade with that writing? Like those kind of things for them to see the practical application and the meaning behind what they're doing is wonderful. And that's like writing specifically. And I'm super passionate about this topic because I did not consider myself a writer at all. I hated writing and I taught writing. And then I ended up writing a book. And it was because I had to unlearn a lot of the things that I learned in traditional school that were blocking me from actually writing and then relearn how to write for modern times and in a way that actually suited my personality and my style. And so that's just one example. We talked a little bit about reading, which was, you know, sort of expose them to a variety of books. Don't be like, oh, you know, let me test you to see in what level you are and then you can only bookshop for that. No, let them read, you know, magazines and comics and things that are like junk that you're like, why are you only? But the thing is, the most important thing is for them to, you're trying to build the love for reading. So even if they're only reading cookbooks the first 3 years and you're like, where are they
like
going with this?
Chicago,
Yes.
My heart is on a string or all the, and then I'm like, oh, I guess they're like into it. So maybe I just go with this Pokemon chapter.
And it's hard. I won't lie. Because as a parent, you're like, oh, just drop that. Why don't you want to read a little bit more about, you know, but if you can resist the temptation, and this is something that I've learned because I've looked up so much to this like voracious readers that are incredibly smart and I'm like, well, how did you cultivate this love for reading? Like, and they're like, well, when I was very little, my parents would let me read whatever I wanted. They never, ever told me, no, you can't read this or you need to read this, or they've never forced me. No, they would let me read whatever I wanted. At the beginning, it was junk. Eventually, I moved on to more interesting things, more, you know, things that expanded my horizons that would make me learn. And now I can't stop reading. And that's actually how they do it in a lot of like unschooling communities or schools like Sudbury schools, which is, I really love these schools because they do things completely differently from any school that I've ever seen. Like kids sometimes don't learn to read until they're 14, but then once they start reading, they cannot stop reading. They are like voracious readers. And so to me, that's so much more important than for you to learn to read the way that I would teach at 7 years old with everybody else when you maybe were not ready or were not interested or were forced and you learn how to read, but then you hate reading and you don't want to read for pleasure anymore. And so, you know, it's a decision that you need to make.
Yeah, no, for sure. Okay, this was so amazing. I feel super inspired. Thank you so much for joining us. I have one last question I ask everyone. It's just like a weird personal question, but I'm curious, what's something most people don't know about you?
Ooh, what's something most people don't know about me? I guess that when I was growing up, I wasn't like I am right now. Right now, I try to, you know, do things differently and try to find ways for me to stand out. But when I was growing up, I would actually try really hard to fit in. I guess naturally, since I was constantly moving environments and I wanted to be accepted and I wanted to have friends and I did not want, you know, I was the new girl 10 times. And that, you know, came with a lot of insecurities. And so I would sometimes even fake my accent to try to imitate the accent of the country that I was moving to. Or like I was always trying to find ways to fit in addition to the fact that the school system makes you fit in. And so it wasn't until I became an adult that I realized like, wait, no, like I'm way better off doing me, right? Doing things differently the way that I, you know, and try to stop just doing things like everybody else and trying to fit in and trying to prove myself. It's like, no, the moment that I did that, then things just took a big turn in my life. And now I generally tell you that I wake up every morning doing what I love. And I think that yeah, this just played up better overall.
I love that. Thank you so much. Okay, can you let everyone know, Anna, where they can find you and the name of your book and all of that fun stuff?
Yeah, so on social media, on Instagram, I'm MissFab_LearningLab. On Twitter or X, at AnnaFabrega11. I have a newsletter called Fab Fridays on Substack. I have a website, afabrega.com, and I have a book that came out last year where you really can find all the principles and all the things that I've talked about, you know, in detail. It has beautiful illustrations by Yannis. And the book's called The Learning Game, Teaching Kids How to Think for Themselves, Embrace Challenge, and Love Learning. And you can find it anywhere where you shop for books online, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Thrift Books, anywhere, or in your local bookstores in the U.S. So, yeah.
I love it. Thank you so much. This was awesome. Appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you so much, Morgan. Wonderful questions.